This is CliffCentral.com.
It is time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you every week right here on CliffCentral.com with Justice Malala. Bye. Nando's. That's right, Nando's. So today we're looking at hopefully something that's either very hot or that's at least lemon and herb. There's very seldom a lemon and herb week in South Africa.
No, absolutely. It's a bit like I was in Pretoria the other day. Can I just say?
Sure.
Sorry to interrupt you. But I was in Pretoria and I stopped at the Nando's. I had a craving, okay? And a friend of mine was in the car with me. So you know, and it's a drive-through and I haven't really used these drive-throughs. The wait was a little bit too long. But he said, no, get the hot. And it was, no, it will be too hot. And then the hot came, and it was just divine. It was the best.
You know why the wait's a bit longer than the other places? Because they actually do it fresh.
Yeah. So they're actually, you know.
They're not microwaving some old chicken from 3 weeks ago. They're doing
no,
it proper.
Please, no.
No, exactly. All right. So yeah. let's get stuck into this. First of all, SA Express, they were forced to shut down last week after its operations staff said that the planes needed to be grounded. There were staff walkouts. The Sunday Times reported that a virtually unknown music promoter in Pretoria, that was the meeting you were going to, was handed a three-year tender because, Justice, this guy got a 2.4 million rand tender and apparently
billion, 2.4 billion,
quite right, rand tender, and no fuel has been delivered.
No, zero. So first of all, I mean, this is the root of corruption. So you're paying for petrol, basically. You're paying 45 million rand a month. So you have a deal with SAA. You pay them 45 million rand. They give you the fuel. You know that it's there. It's at the airport. They do all the logistics. They get it to you.
Well, for 2.4 billion, yeah, you should do the logistics.
Yeah. So, you're thinking, I'm paying 45 million rand. You know what? I'm going to change that. I want to pay more. So you don't go to a professional. You don't go to someone who actually provides jet fuel. You say, no. I'm going to get a guy who's a music promoter. And can I just say music promoters are amazing people. Some of my best friends are music promoters. But you don't go to a guy who knows nothing about delivering fuel. When you want to fill up your car, you don't go to Checkers and say, please, can I have some petrol? You go to the BP garage down the road or whatever the brand is, right? So not only do you go to some unknown guy who's never done this in his whole life.
But now you're paying more.
He's saying, I'll give you 22 million more.
And he doesn't deliver.
And then he doesn't deliver. He doesn't
deliver.
And
this goes on for how long before someone goes, bing, 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 there's a problem.
Well, all this is coming out now that SA Express, first of all, has been going through a lot of turbulence over the past few years. But now someone said, you know, if we don't stop these guys from flying, a plane is going to fly, it's going to fall out of the sky. Now, in South Africa,
I think you cover this in your book, We Are Now Beginning Our Descent.
But this is exactly the kind of descent I was talking about, where you have corruption so blatant, so...
But also, it's very amateur. It's also so amateurish because if you're going to be corrupt, at least try to hide it. At least, you know, attempt to do some of the work so that maybe you skim off a little more than you should.
Yeah.
But in this case, this is just theft.
This is pure theft. This is pure, unadulterated theft.
Now, how come this isn't getting the kind of uproar and opprobrium that Nkandla got? I mean, I know the president is a fairly central character in the national discussions, but this is a lot more money, 2.4 billion rand, as opposed to that homestead of the president's in Nkandla. This is a very, very big chunk of our national fiscus.
Yeah.
I mean, 2.4 billion rand, you could build a ton of houses. You could lay on electricity and water for a lot of rural
schools,
neighborhoods.
Schools, teachers.
Oh, my God. Oh,
I mean, you could do so much. But I'll tell you what. I mean, this particular story broke on Sunday. And Pravin Gordhan said, look, I don't have all the details. There's a lot going on. But you'll know that Pravin Gordhan had announced just 4 days before, I think, or 5 days before, a new board for SA Express. It includes people like Thabile Oka, the economist, a few other people. And so for me, that story is interesting in the sense that you have a situation where Pravin Gordhan goes back to public enterprises, and every day you realize just how bad Lynn Brown and before her Malusi Gigaba were as ministers. Lynn Brown did nothing as things fell apart at SA Express. She did nothing as things fell apart at SAA. She did nothing as thievery was going on at Eskom. She did absolutely nothing about Denel, Transnet, Prasa, all these entities are state-owned enterprises which she was overseeing. All of them, if you look at what's happened over the past few months, Eskom, it's got a new board, a new CEO. Denel, new board, new CEO. Transnet, same thing. All these places. You know, Gareth, basically, people stole and stole with impunity. And this, just from what we know, there is so much more that we don't know. There are millions and millions been stolen.
If you think about just SAA, I mean, SA Express, we kind of, you know, you look at as sort of the little step-nephew of SAA.
Exactly.
And we know SAA has cost us a fortune, and it can't all have been on expenditure that we can account for.
Yeah, yeah.
There must be a lot of stuff going on
there
as
well. Here's the thing that made me want to jump up and you know, kick something. Because you take, and this is a very good example you're making, SAA, right? 2 weeks ago, the CEO, and, you know, he's a new guy there. He's only been there for about 6 months now, 5 months. Vuyani Jahana, I think, from Vodacom. He goes in to clean up this place. He's got a new board now. Dudu Mieni, praise the Lord, has, you know, exited, left. And so you have a great thing going on there. But they go to Parliament. Parliament says, you guys want 21.7 billion rand. So tell us what is going on with your finances. Be open with us. They say, no, we can't tell you. Now, I want to tell you something. You know, when you see a lady walk into Spar or into ShopRite Checkers or into Boxer, she's going to go in there with her little money, her 1,000 rand grant from government per month.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to buy some Millimil or some other food stuff, and 14% in VAT is going to be taken from her. So that poor woman, 14 is taken from her and it goes straight to SAA. The poor are paying for SAA. And these guys arrive at Parliament and say, no, we can't tell you. We want a private meeting. We can't tell you our stuff in public. So they're saying, you South Africans are stupid.
It's very insulting.
You pay for us. You pay for this airline. But we're not going to tell you. We're not going to tell you what we're doing with your money. It's like saying, imagine if you're running a business. You have shareholders, right? People who've put their money, their sweat into the business. And you say, you guys shut up. I'm not going to tell you what's happening with your money.
It takes an extraordinary amount of arrogance.
And a
lack of accountability that beggars belief,
yeah,
to believe that you can do this to people.
Yeah.
And you're not doing it to this nameless institution called the state. You're doing it to the people of South Africa.
It's ordinary people.
I think the punishment for wasting public money should be extreme.
Yeah.
Because while we all despise theft in all of its various forms, a citizen stealing from a citizen is an awful thing.
Yeah.
But there is something extra nasty about what you do to the fabric of society when you steal public money.
No, it just goes to the heart of, you know, you've stepped out of the social compact that, you know, we all are going to do a bit and we're all going to help, you know, raise up the levels of the poorest of the poor and so forth. And you've stepped out of it and you said, all of you are. You know, that is how societies break, that people step out of that of the contract.
Hasn't government seen enough red flags in this issue with things like e-tolls? Haven't they seen how the public in this country are not prepared to just carry on financing graft? I mean, we will stop paying tax. People will stop. They already have in some places.
Yeah.
And we discussed this last week on the Burning Platform about how few municipalities are delivering any kind of service at all.
Mm.
Those people are already living without government in their lives. They don't need government. This should be worrying not just Zweli Mkhize, but everyone in the state structure, because people don't need to finance politicians, because politicians add no value back into their lives. So why would they pay tax?
No, absolutely. It's inevitable. People will start doing what many countries in South America saw. People hoarding money in their homes so that they don't have to pay tax. People finding creative ways to get around saying, oh, you know, I give my money to the state and it gets stolen blind. So, so I think the challenge for people like and for Pravin Gordhan in particular is to show us that the seriousness about using state money in a better way. But you know,
so this music promoter, just to go back to SA Express,
yeah,
are they going to now follow up on this? Is he going to be charged with not delivering on his service? Is his tender going to be cancelled? Is he going to have to pay that money back?
This is
am I stupid? Am I stupid?
This is South Africa. You can get away with a lot. Look, I mean, by rights, by, you know, SA Express itself, some of the two managers signed off on this contract. It would be interesting to follow the money and see who this guy is connected to, how it came about that he got that contract, what was the tender process and so forth.
And those two managers should then also be responsible.
Now, that's a state entity. That means that it's subject to the Public Finance Management Act. That Public Finance Management Act is very, very clear that there is a tender process, that there's a unit that will say this is on the basis of price and all these boxes you have to tick. This is why this person won.
I mean, Patricia DeLille, this woman has had to go through all kinds of investigations and hearings and disciplinary actions because she put in like trolley doors.
Yes.
And there's someone with 2.4 billion rand in their bank account and they've never delivered a drop of fuel.
They're in Tswane and they're laughing. It's beautiful. So the law should take its course. Will it take its course? And perhaps this is the point where just the last thing on these state-owned enterprises. You know, the EFF says some interesting things. So on the land issue, the EFF says stuff like, no, you can't fiddle with the problem. You've got to go one way and just take all the land and redistribute it. That's it. So stop trying to fix the problem. Just boom, and then you have day zero. And I sit there and say, jeepers, these guys are there. But with state-owned enterprises, sometimes I'm thinking, so maybe you fix SAA and you throw 25 billion into it over the next 3 years. But nowhere in the world are people still owning, or states still owning, airlines. Mm. More and more entrepreneurs are, in the past, you and I would be sitting here and we'd be working for the SABC.
Yeah.
Because radio was unradio in our case.
State-owned.
Was state-owned and there was only one, and you know, both of us would have our scripts saying what, you know, is the right thing to say. So all this stuff is being disrupted by new technology, new ways of thinking, entrepreneurs.
The EFF are quite progressive in some ways. I mean, they've really introduced a lot of interesting dynamics to our politics, and we've got to give them credit for that. They are a radical bunch by comparison with the ANC that they were born from. But the idea that the state is the best administrator of things like land and business and banking and mining is just – there is so much evidence to show that that is the worst possible way to run these things that at this point the EFF are really arguing against themselves.
No, this is the problem. Thank you very much. I think this is the last show that we'll ever have of the Burning Platform, because that is the truth. Why do people who know have seen what states can do?
Yeah.
And how they consistently run everything they touch into the ground, still saying, no, no, no. I mean, the idea that I would trust that the EFF would run an efficient land redistribution program in South Africa. It's preposterous. When the state cannot run SA Express,
if Jesus and his 12 disciples had to run land redistribution, and let's say that they were absolutely equitable about it, within 5 minutes of their distribution of land, some rotten people in the system would have messed it up, and there would again be a hierarchy, and there would again be elites, and it would take all of 5 minutes for that to develop, because people. But Justice, people. The other thing that I think is worth getting into, and maybe it's not on this burning platform, but perhaps for future discussions, is the idea that when a private individual or a group of individuals who have decided to cooperate in a corporation or whatever else it is, decide to put money into a venture, like an airline, for example, if that venture goes under, they are all universally severally liable for the costs. There is accountability, and if they run it well, they'll make profits.
Yeah.
So people tend to look at businesses and say, well, you know, they're making profits. They're capitalists who are ripping off people. But they also don't look at the side of loss, which for many businesses is the reality, especially in the first couple of years. And with public money, you don't get that accountability. You don't get that individual level of responsibility that you would with someone who's using their own money to finance a venture. No. And if you are running a venture like an airline, there are very, very tight margins there.
Absolutely.
It's so competitive.
And you're subject to oil prices fluctuating all the time. You're subject to all sorts of things going on all at the same time. But here's the thing. A national airline, most national airlines were started basically because, we need to stimulate trade with Namibia. So the state airline would start flying to Namibia. But if you start allowing South African business and Namibian businesses to cooperate and work together, then an entrepreneur will say, I need to get more people need to be flying between the two. Why should you take state money and be putting into that line when today an entrepreneur can put on two flights a week or three flights a week and boom, you have something.
But even that is like thinking old, because these days, you can be in Windhoek and I can be in Johannesburg, and we can do Skype. Internet deals, and nobody needs to leave their country.
No.
So the fact that the state has to incur an expense at the taxpayers' cost,
it's
crazy, right?
Absolutely nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Anyway, so I think the one thing that is not being discussed is that we're trying to fix this old model of, we've got to own trains. We've got to own this. We've got to own that. Actually, maybe there are things. That, for example, poor people need to go from Soshanguve to Roslyn or from Harangua to Joburg for work. Maybe we need to think about how do we make the trains cheap,
well,
efficient.
Look at how government has proven when it does get its act together, it can do a wonderful thing. We've seen SARS operate very well in the past, before Tom Moyane.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the Gautrain being built by Mbazi Mashiloa and a Gauteng province that was run properly.
And
so we've seen it can be done.
It can be done.
Poor people, of course, always lose when government doesn't do what it's meant to do. Rich people just carry on as they were.
Yeah.
They're insulated.
So I think that the privatization word, and you know, I know COSATU, the SACP will jump up and down, but we need to seriously think about what are we doing in places we don't need to be. SAA, sell it off and let someone who is very good run it. Because if I'm going to Durban, I want to fly at half the price that SAA. In fact, if I walk across from SAA and go to Mango or to Kulula, I will pay half.
That's right.
So this is a scam, or government people using SAA and not using, you know, a cheaper.
But then
airline.
You know, we must stop being stupid consumers. We must make our decisions and support the businesses that deserve our money.
Yeah.
And that charge us a reasonable fee for it.
Yeah.
Because you're actually that ticket on SAA isn't really costing what it says. It's costing you probably three times that if you include the taxes you've paid towards SAA. And even the people who aren't flying are paying for it.
No. It's the lady walking into Boxer.
Exactly.
Kerry.
All right. So, I mean, let's just, you're saying that there is a place for privatization and that there is a place for the state to build infrastructure and to get involved.
Yeah, there is.
And there's some cabinet posts that can be trimmed.
I saw that Cyril Ramaphosa says, no, we're almost done with that process and we'll introduce a new structure after the elections next year. Now, that sounds fantastic. But that means that for one more year, we are paying for... At the moment, we've got, 34 ministers?
Plus deputy ministers.
So the ministers and deputy ministers, that makes 75, right? Now, let me tell you, that is a lot of deadwood we're carrying. People running around
sheltered employment
on the M1 with their flashing lights. Those people have no jobs.
And really, does the deputy minister of sport have any kind of impact on the average South African's life? Who knows? Who knows? He's probably sitting outside right now, talking to Sia. Who knows? All right.
Who are these deputy ministers?
Also forget is there's the minister, the deputy minister. Then each department, even the stupid departments that we can't justify, have a director general, a deputy director general, an office that needs running. I mean, the costs just multiply and multiply. Before you know it, the Ministry of Sport, which is such an unnecessary thing to have because none of our sports teams are even performing. None of them. Let's just point this out.
This is my point. You give government a job, then you've killed the sport.
Just get out of the things you don't need to be in government.
Yeah.
And you know what? All of us have to realize the less government we have in our lives, the better off we usually are.
Absolutely.
Even if you're poor, get your grant and get out of there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the DA because we've laid into the ANC now for a little while. So the DA have had... And we've talked about this and we've thrown a lot of shade their way rightfully in the last week or two because they've handled this Patricia the Little thing badly.
Yeah.
There's this report that I saw in the newspapers, I don't know what to believe, about senior DA leaders plotting to form a breakaway party. Some people say it's just gossip. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean I think the key thing here, and I think it's very disingenuous of the DA. You know, they're a political party, so that's the first thing they'd say is that, oh, these are lies, these are rumors, and, you know, nothing, no meaningful thing to it, and so forth. But, you know, when I hear politicians say shoddy journalism, I'll tell you, a lot of the stuff that we talk about on this show was on the front page of a newspaper, government or politician saying, oh, no, it's not true and so forth. And it turns out to be true. So I'm leaning towards the City Press and the reporters who wrote this story because they are very, very capable, competent people who've broken some good stories in the past. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the story in the City Press says that 3 meetings have been held with Dr. Franz Cronier, and I'm sure you've had him on this show in the past, and in which he says, yeah, we had these 3 meetings. We spoke about, you know, what liberalism is and what kind of party that would be, individual rights, you know, versus group thinking and group rights thinking and so forth, all those things. So for me, when I see... the DA spokesperson, I spoke to John Moody the other day on my TV show, you know, all of them jumping up and down saying, it's not true, it's not true. I sit there and say, first of all, if, you know, if Sia and I go outside and we say, Sia, we must have a mutiny now, and we mutter and make plans out in the corner. I mean, how are you going to know? How is Mabale going to know? How is Ben going to know? Because, you know, it's us in our little corner muttering away and, you know, planning all sorts of malfeasance. So, to be honest, I don't think the guys who are saying it's not true should be saying that. I think that there is some unhappiness in the DA. If you look at a columnist like Peter Bruce, who wrote... a very, I thought was a very beautiful column, actually, a few weeks ago, about 4 weeks ago, I think, in which someone from the DA had passed him some writings by Alan Payton about what a liberal party is. And he quotes these documents, which, I sent him a message saying, it sounds like you're reading the stuff that I used to read from the ANC in the 80s when I was a kid. You know, you'd be given some documents. People say, yeah, this is what you need to read. And, you know, those ideals of a liberal party were actually ideals that made it into the ANC's documents in the 80s. So I think that there's a conversation going on about a possible breakaway party. Will it be led by Helen Zille? I don't know. I think she's become a divisive figure in our politics.
I think she's probably exhausted.
Yeah.
If your own party is hostile territory, can you imagine how much more hostile it is outside of your party?
Yeah. No, I think it would be a very risky move. There has been, a lot of discussion. If you look at, an MP like Michael Cardo, people like Gavin Davis in the DN, they've all been mentioned as possibly being this breakaway grouping. I don't know if they are, but they've had a real conversation about what is a liberal in the South African context? What is a liberal in the DA? Is the DA a liberal party still or not? And so forth. So I think there is definitely smoke. And sometimes
Gwenya is another one.
Gwenya is another one.
Is liberalism dead in the DA, or is liberalism under threat in the DA, or is liberalism just not so popular anymore?
I think that The growth of any political party, or let's say, you know, you and I go out and say, no, yeah, we're going to start a business and it's Justice and Garrett. Then Siad comes along and then Mabale joins and then Ben joins. Now there's five of us. There will be a shift in what we think we are. And you speak to any of the five individuals, you'll see differences.
So if that has happened,
yeah.
In your experience on reporting about politics in South Africa over the last couple of years and your experience of the ideologies that some of these political parties carry, if liberalism has decreased as an ideal inside the party, what has increased in its place? What has it been supplanted by?
I think globally, globally, I think on our continent and in the United States, issues of race, issues of legacy of colonialism elsewhere, apartheid in South Africa, have taken center stage and have become a bigger conversation than it has been in the past. So you could debate classic liberalism without challenging it with issues of the legacies of colonialism, of apartheid, and so forth. So it was almost a purist or a pure version of what liberalism is, without the hard knock that's at the door about redress, about justice, about what has happened practically, whether it's in the United States with the legacy of slavery, whether it's South Africa and apartheid, whether it's Kenya and colonialism, whether it's the UK and the long shadow of the Commonwealth and colonialism hanging over them. So I think what's happened is that conversation has challenged liberal thinking to begin to confront what could have or what happened while liberalism or liberals spoke. I mean, if you take Alan Paton and say, who spoke powerfully as a liberal? People like him, other people spoke very, very powerfully. But I think that part of the liberal ethos of speaking and speaking and speaking, but the lack of, in our context, say, action. So you'll say Helen Suzman spoke and used the loss to embarrass the apartheid government again and again, the lone MP in the 70s, 80s. Yeah. It was a very powerful voice. And that's, if you're a liberal, you say, I will use my voice. I will continue to use my voice.
So maybe people are just disappointed in what results they got from liberalism, that maybe the harvest wasn't as good as they thought.
Yes, I think that. I think also, perhaps what liberalism hasn't addressed is redress, recourse. How do you say we've had 46 years of, if you take the National Party rule, classic apartheid from 1946 to 1994?
Yeah.
1948, sorry, to 1994. What do you say? How do you say we had Bantustans? You had the tricameral parliament. You had an education system that was the BOP system and the South African system. In the South African system, you had colored, Indian
parliament.
Tricameral parliament. So I think one of the things, and I'm, you know, the interesting thing for me about the assault, if you will, on liberalism is mirrors the assault on Nelson Mandela, for example.
Yeah, I don't know if that's fair, because I think liberalism, first of all, it didn't become the central tent peg of government in any regime.
No.
Certainly not under apartheid. And since while it may have had a few months of opportunity when we had the dawn of our new nation, I don't know that it's really, if anything's to blame, it's a bunch of other things. And then maybe number 10, 11, 12 on the list is, you know, liberalism. But it seems like it's almost like striking at the person you believe is holier than thou.
Yeah.
You know, instead of going for like thieves and corrupt politicians and white capital and all of those things that we know are issues, real issues, tangible issues, liberalism seems to be almost like you're sacrificing Isaac and you're Abraham and you're trying to prove to God that you care.
But our politics now
it's a very allegorical, you know.
Our politics now are characterized by an almost sense of, what did you do in the war?
But let's not go down that path, because there could be people like Blade and Zimande who's, you know, might have been proffered as these great soldiers who weren't.
Yes. Yeah, nativist? It's almost like a hard push for.
Is it a kind of recidivistic populism?
Recidivist, that's the word I was looking for.
It's like a populism which something has to be sacrificed here.
Yes.
So let's take the one thing that's really kind of defenseless, because liberalism is sort of weak on defense.
And kick that,
because it's easier than confronting our own responsibilities.
Our own demons, yeah. So I think, you know, I think that's where the DA finds itself, that debate is inside the DA. And with the growth of the DA, I didn't read the piece, but I saw a headline that said, and in the federal executive of the DA, there's a kind of a bigoist and a da-da-da and so forth and so forth. And I thought, that's part of the growth of the DA. If you take Patricia de Lille, came from being a leader of the PAC, as a leader of the PAC, she would stand in front of crowds in the 90s, and I've been at many meetings where she was, and would say, drive whites into the sea.
Right.
So her racial politics are very much not what the DA are. Maybe she's evolved, maybe they've evolved.
But is that a compliment to the DA, that they could become that broad church the ANC always said they were? Because the ANC took in the old National Party eventually.
Yeah.
The DA, they've occupied a much more central space in some ways.
They occupied a central space. They've tried to keep it liberal, but remember that in 1994 the DP got 1.7% of the vote. Yeah. It was when they did the merger with the National Party, and it became the new National Party and the Democratic Alliance. That they jumped up in electoral support to about 5%. Then Patricia de Lille and others came in, and they went a little bit bigger. And I think the DA along that path takes on all kinds of elements and it becomes a little bit more conservative, a little bit more radical in some aspects and so forth. But it can be the party that Tony Leon took on in 1994. It's a totally different right. animal.
So there's
maybe it's not even a pure liberal party. It's a party with liberal roots and a liberal outlook, but the politics of the day, the politics of redress, the politics of our past and our history will without doubt have an impact on it.
So in other words, your advice to them is there's this tightrope walk really between the theory and the classical liberalism, which sounds really good and has fantastic. You seem to be someone who likes to read this stuff. But at the same time, you're saying there is a realistic element of this that is not speaking to people the way that classical liberalism perhaps did once.
Yeah.
In other words, things have changed. Get with it.
Yeah.
And the more people you welcome in, the more that's going to change.
I'll tell you, the success of the DA for me is that they went realpolitik over the past 10 years. So it was Jacob Zuma is bad, and this is why he's bad, and we're going to show him up. Before that, it would be Thabo Mbeki and HIV AIDS and so forth. And I think the DA, because now it's almost like, oh, you know, Gareth, let's take some cigars and go have a nice long talk. And the talk is going all over the place. They need to find something to focus on and get back on the horse.
But you pointed something else out now. A lot of their stuff has been external and it's been reactive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been about who the ANC are. But I don't know how much time they've spent on their own DNA.
I think the Ramaphosa period, the past 5 years, 5 months, has opened up the space for them to do that. So while they don't have a clear enemy, suddenly they're looking at themselves and saying, you, me, well, who are we? What are we? And I think that there are two parts for their leadership. Either Musi Maimane says, we got to fight. There's an election in 12 months' time. Let's forget about, you know, turbulence, this rattlings about who we are. Let's just focus and you just drive that thing and hit it. Or you actually start reflecting. And when you reflect, you know, it's like going to therapy. You start crying, you start wailing, you start doing this. And it's hard and it's hardcore.
Well, that course in political philosophy was brought to you by Nando's. Jeez, we went deep there.
I know.
I haven't done that for a long time.
No, usually we
talk about current affairs, but this is interesting.
It is interesting. Can I just say one thing about the DA? A lot of people saying, yeah, the DA is imploding and so forth. Mm. If you go back the past 10 years of the Jacob Zuma administration, we would not have scored the victories that we have as a society against the malfeasance of the Jacob Zuma era if it wasn't for the opposition. The DA did an amazing job of using the constitution, the courts, the streets to parliament to show up just how bad Jacob Zuma is. So whatever they do, for me, the tragedy would be if our opposition in South Africa became weaker and we go back to a situation where the ANC increases, goes to 66%, 67%. There's a poll by Ipsos which shows that the DA, which got 22% in 2014, is now polling at 20%. That's 2.5 percentage points down. And I think that is... that would be a tragedy if the DA, the EFF, COPE, everyone else lost out. So I hope not just the DA, the entire opposition holds or becomes a little bit stronger. We need, even if the best party in South Africa, and by the best party I mean, who's the best party in South Africa? The Gwangwetla party.
But they're still around.
I don't know. Quite
quiet, I remember them on the 94 ballot.
Yes, they were around. So, you know, let's say the Kwankwetla party becomes the ruling party. I don't want them to have 66 or 70%. I want them to know that another party can come in. So, yeah. You know, all I'm saying is it's in all our interests to have a strong, vibrant opposition in this country, and we need more of that.
So how is Cyril doing? We keep reflecting on him almost unfairly. You know, they do this thing in America where they look at the first 100 yeah. days of a president, yeah. and now we've started doing that too, mm. and we're evaluating him on really what is like his orientation period. But we discussed some of this last yeah. week. He has done a lot already, yeah. and you have – I read something you wrote just the other day about how, you know, you can't be impatient about some of these things.
Yeah. No, you know, so and let's not spend too much time on it, but I do think that he's still in that – you're absolutely right. In his probation period, he's, mm-hmm. You know, he's still finding – feeling his power. And we know that that power was very slim, that he won by, you know, he's still surrounded by some very nasty characters.
But is that entirely true, too? Because if we consider the number of people who we understood by rumor and gossip anyway to have been paid off in terms of their votes, mm. perhaps his real support was bigger than we thought. If we're to believe that there was vote rigging and that there were people who were bribed into voting a certain yeah. way. We know yeah. which way they would have been bribed to vote.
Yes.
Does that mean that maybe this gives him a little bit of margin, like a 5 or 10% more than we think?
I think there is some, but I think that in the National Executive Committee itself, the way that voting went, it guaranteed that the side that should have lost, and that Sankosa and Dlamini Zuma side, got more traction than we expect.
So much so that Jesse Duarte the other day in a press conference said, no, the ANC elected two sides. They didn't elect a faction. I mean, Jesse rewrites history almost every single day. She should work for Malcolm Gladwell and his podcast, Revisionist History.
Absolutely.
What do you make of that? That's spin doctoring,
that's
right?
Spin doctoring. She's saying yes. Factions went in there, and you know, Mtutuzi Manana and all those people. Shame. So I think that for what it is, I'm one of those people who think that Cyril has, with a very bad hand, done okay, and that I think he'll do better in the future. But I can, you know, just on the other topic, I think we said we might talk about, and that's the NPA and how the NPA lost the 250 million rand loot.
Yeah,
of
yeah
the
this is class. This is important. I yeah. mean, you're going to tell me that Jacob Zuma won.
I'm telling you that Jacob Zuma won because let's go back to December 2007.
Yeah.
You and I watching this thing happening. Jacob Zuma wins 60% votes at Polokwane, becomes the ANC president. That conference take a resolution that we are going to disband the Scorpions unit.
Hmm. Let's just remember to thank the people involved as well. We must spend a lot of time thanking Zwelinzi Mavavi for what he did.
Yes, thank you.
Julius Malema, thank you for what you did.
Thank you very much.
Bladen Zimande, thank you for what you did.
Yes. Eunice Karim. Maggie Sochu.
The Women's League.
Yeah. yeah
thank you very much, all
you.
Of you. You handed us 9 years
yeah.
of Jacob Zuma.
And all of them were very nicely thanked with cabinet positions.
And then later discarded.
Yes, yes. Maggie Sochu became the Deputy Minister of Police. Eunice Karim became Communications Minister. Those two were the two members of Parliament who ran into Parliament and said, we are now putting a motion on the table to disband the Scorpions.
Yeah.
And they went ahead and they did it. They just did it.
But now to go back to the Scorpions,
yes,
that unit was then disbanded, so, shut down.
Exactly.
Replaced by the Hawks.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, what happens when you take a forensic unit that can say, oh, justice transferred 20 million rand from an offshore account to Gareth at this at this time and so forth with this. The expertise was there. The Scorpions knew how to work with the NPA, which at the time under Vusi Pikoli, you could trust, you could know that they'd put together a case. So what Jacob Zuma does is get rid of the Scorpions, put in a poodle unit called the Hawks, and then goes to the NPA, gets rid of Vusi Pikoli, puts in Menzi Simelane, his own guy, a young guy who he could manipulate, a guy who the court said this was the wrong guy, is not a man of integrity. Then after that puts in season, goes for a long time without putting in a head, so that's an acting head. Then put in Mxolisi Ngasana, who the courts have found that Zuma was essentially bribing and gave him 17 million and so forth and so forth. So what you've done is take away the investigative bit of South Africa, the Scorpions, and leave just the Hawks and sort of flailing about. And then you take away the prosecutorial ability and you've put in Sean Abrahams there. And so when a case as complex as the Gupta Frieda case and other cases comes along, you actually don't have the expertise in the system to prosecute, to investigate one, to prosecute and to convict.
It's like it's like a meal and you have no teeth.
Exactly. This is exactly it. So you're sitting there and I've put a gourmet meal in front of you. You can do nothing. You can smell it. The smell of the foie gras or whatever it is. But you can't do anything about this thing. So Jacob Zuma has managed to hollow out not just that institution. Imagine if today I come to you and say, I'm going to go to the public protector and lay a case about 123.
Right.
I can tell you now, it ain't going to happen because since Busisiwe Mkhwebane came in, investigators have left. People have been fired and the ideologues have been brought in.
I mean, it really does feel like you can get away with pretty much anything right now.
It goes back to that deal we spoke about right at the beginning of this program.
Like you could get away with it.
Because who is investigating how that deal was done?
You just have to be brazen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is what our president taught us. Like, be as brazen as you can and you could get away with billions.
Don't steal in the dark. Steal in broad daylight.
Just don't care.
So for me, this is Cyril Ramaphosa. So if you talk about his successes, and there are quite a lot of them, there are the failures are that, for example, Sean Abrahams is still the head of the National Prosecutor's Office.
And those immediate areas of concern, like he could address this tomorrow. This is not something that's politically a hot potato. He could do this and it would empower him enormously because it would give back some teeth to these investigative units, which would enable him to say to corrupt people, hey, we've now got competent guys looking for you.
Yeah. No, he's the, you know, I'm so at the Hawks, for example, he's just appointed this guy who's got a PhD in an illicit money transfers. He's a career cop. This guy sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. Sounds like he will be their leader we need in at the Hawks. So, you know, he started last Thursday, I think it was. That's a good appointment. But if that guy puts together a good case, who's going to prosecute it at the NPA? Sean, who got rid of, what's the MP's name? Glynis Breytenbach, who allowed Harry Nell to go. Some of the best prosecutors in South Africa have left the system. So who's going to prosecute this? Who's going to work with a cop from the Hawks to build a case that's winnable? This is the problem.
And the Zuma people and the Guptas must have been laughing when the NPA were forced to hand back all of that Gupta loot.
Oh,
they must have been laughing, going, ha, these incompetent idiots.
Exactly.
Our plan worked.
And can I tell you what the thing is? If you look at many of the defense lawyers that the Guptas and others use, many of them came from the NPA.
Wow. So they know how to.
They know how.
It's like if you want to find a thief, hire a thief.
Yeah. Exactly. Yo. So
I better get sued for that. But
no, you're making a very nice analogy, but that's what it is.
All right, Justice, that's a full menu for today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's fun.
Please excuse all the food allegories used during the transmission of this broadcast. If you do want good food, go to Nando's. They bring you this burning platform, but every day at Nando's, there's a burning platform for you. Thank you, Justice.
Thank you, Gavin.
This is CliffCentral.com.